Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a video and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Today, I'm delighted to welcome someone from the world of art who's made a mark, Arundhati Ghosh. Arundhati, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Arundhati is the Executive Director of the India Foundation for the Arts, IFA. She's recognized and awarded all over the world. She's an advisory board member of the Museum of Art and Photography. She's a board member of Sangma, an organization that works for sex workers and sexual minorities. She's an eminent speaker and writer on the arts. And she has a degree in classical dance, and she's a poet in Bangla. So Arundhati, after what an incredible kind of a track record you have, what would you say are three key milestones in your life?
Yeah, I think, thanks Ashutosh, thanks for having me on your brand for you. Three milestones, you know, one is as old as me, like mm-hmm. I'm nearing half a century.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many things, but I chose three to speak to you about in this session. The first one was actually realizing that whatever I do in life, as career, as vocation, as livelihood, has to align with my personal values and personal politics.
Okay.
I was in the corporate sector initially. And the move that I made after 7 years from pro-profit to non-profit, from the corporate sector, which was fantastic. My experience was great. I had fantastic places to work at, great bosses. But it didn't satisfy something inside me. And I realized the reason was not that the work wasn't good or it didn't satisfy my intellectual ability, like sort of thirst, or it didn't pay well. It paid incredibly well. And the thing was that it didn't quite align with my personal values and personal politics. And that's why the shift to the arts and shift to nonprofit and shift to the world, a different world. That's one, realizing that. The second one happened in 2013, where after 12 years of being in this sector, and I still considered myself a little bit of an outsider, I think. And I was suddenly told by my trustees that I had to leave this foundation and would I be willing to take on the executive director's role. The executive director at that time, who was retiring, who was my boss for the first 12 years, was 21 years older than me. He was a man. And he had spent a long time in the art sector. He was a theater director, writer himself. And suddenly I was to fill this role. So that was the second milestone, where I realized that you don't actually fill roles. You get into a place and you make your own role. So you don't fill other people's shoes.
Well said. Yeah.
You respect those shoes for what they did. But your shoes or chappals or whatever you're wearing is yours. You know. So the third thing actually is a milestone in many ways. 2 years ago, I had a cerebral stroke. I think it has been, if I may say so, touch wood, one of the best things that's happened to me.
Wow.
It made me realize so many things about myself, about my work, and about the relationship I have with the world. Professional, personal, emotional, and the journeys. And I think it happened at a very good time, just before you hit the 50 mark, which is sort of, I mean, it's already beyond your midpoint in life probably, but everybody looks at that as a as a kind of a milestone on its own. So these three things.
Fantastic. So let's now talk about the India Foundation for the Arts. Tell me about the scope of work at the foundation.
So just to give you a little background, we are celebrating 25 years this year. So it's again another milestone.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So this organization looks at supporting arts and culture projects across the country.
Okay.
Every discipline of the arts that you can imagine and those yet to be discovered. Every language, every form, all kinds of arts. We support the arts through different programs that we have. So basically, artists, scholars, writers write proposals to us about their projects under these different programs.
Right.
We have their own mandate. And then we evaluate them. We get a panel of experts to look at them. And we sort of give grants. And when I say grants, it actually means that the copyright of the work that happens is yours. It's the artist. We don't take anything. It's a totally philanthropic activity. So IFA is an independent trust. we are an independent body. We raise our own funds.
Mm.
And so, you know, unlike a Ford Foundation, which has its own pot,
correct,
or a government, say the Ministry of Culture, which has its own pot,
mm-hmm.
IFA is independent in every way. So we raise funds from different kinds of donors,
mm-hmm.
Organizations, trusts, foundations, individuals, corporate CSR. We do our own fundraising events. And so that's one team looks after raising that money. The okay. other team looks after the good job, which is distributing the money through the grants
okay.
that we make.
Okay. Oh.
Giving you statistics a little bit, 25 years supported about 680 projects of this nature, the mm. outcomes of which as books, films, seminars, conferences, archives, etc. are out there, performances are out there for people to get enriched by.
Mm-hmm.
We are a small grant maker. So in for all these 680 projects that we've supported, the money that we've given out is probably around 23-24 crores.
Mm-hmm.
So our grants are anywhere between the smallest grant that now we make, the smallest one, and the smallest support that we give is 25,000 rupees, and the largest is 6 lakhs.
Okay.
You know, in India, a lot can happen with small monies also.
Absolutely.
So that's really okay. the foundation's work.
Okay. And, you know, the when you give out money to the young and upcoming artists, is it just money or is there also a lot of mentorship from seniors?
So they're not all young and upcoming, actually. We have many mid-career artists, scholars, older people.
Mm.
It is support for the project. So the merit of the project is what one looks at.
Mm.
So we've had like stalwarts in their fields and very young people supported under the same program as
mm.
well.
Mm.
We don't formally give mentorship because that's not really the, you know, we are not even equipped to do that. We don't know enough about the arts.
Mm.
But what happens is, but in some programs under some projects,
mm.
if the person requires help, professional advice,
mm.
it is made part of the project.
Mm.
And they can take that advice from a senior in their own discipline, in their own field.
Mm.
And that provision is there. So if somebody says, I need, you know, some consulting or advisory ideas from X, and this is how much we need to pay that person, that mm. becomes part of the project cost.
Okay.
Because we realize that that advice is important for that project to happen.
Okay.
But we don't like pushing mentorship because it's also trusting another idea, you know, onto young or older people.
I understand.
They should be able to choose who they want advice or as a discussant on their project.
And, you know, for all our viewers and listeners, give me an example of a project that you may have funded without giving names, of course.
No, I can give names also. So one of my, really a project very close to my heart is in the city of Bangalore. So we have a program called Project 560.
Mm.
Which looks at, and 560 being the first three digits of Bangalore's PIN code.
Oh,
it's the program under which artists, researchers, even citizens and people from neighborhood can do projects which help them discover the city, explore the city and build relationships with the city.
Mm.
So one of the projects that we supported is a year-long project with the Aravani Art Collective. Art Project is the name of the group.
Mm.
They're a group of women and trans women artists
who
come together.
Okay.
And what they mainly did was they did these beautiful murals on walls in public spaces,
okay.
expressing the way trans people see their lives and the lives around them.
Mm.
Plus, they also did, you know, on commission in corporate offices, etc. They have a very particular kind of a style. If you, I know you've interviewed MAP, you've interviewed Abhishek.
Mm.
Just outside the MAP right now, there's a scaffolding. And on the scaffolding is an art by the Aravani Art Project.
I see, okay.
Now, what we did through Project 560 is we supported them to do 9 events through the city, exploring the relationship trans women have with the city of Bangalore and engaging the public to understand their struggles, their stories, their you know, joys and sorrows, making them, because, you know, mostly we make certain communities invisible in the city or we don't talk about them when we talk about the city.
Mm.
This was an attempt to bring those stories, those voices back into the fabric of the city. So it's a project that I have learned a lot from. And it has deeply inspired me to sort of understand how different people build relationships and live in this city.
Amazing. And what is the basis of selecting a project for funding?
So different programs have different mandates. So obviously the first parameter is that it has to fit the mandate. The second parameter that we often look at is how does the applicant understand the context within which they are working? And the context is different for each project. But how deeply engaged are they? So, you know, just to give you an example of projects we don't support. We don't like projects that seem like parachute projects, where you come in, you do a project, you take off, you know, it doesn't matter. Or project that often people in the art world call art made in a suitcase to travel. It has no relevance, no context, nothing. You could just put it in a suitcase, take it anywhere and, you know, it would work. Like in advertising, they used to teach us, you know, if you are, if you want to be something for everybody, probably you're nothing to nobody.
Correct.
And I think that works very much for the arts. It has to be connected to its context. It has to have a relevance. So these are some of the questions we ask. We also look at prior work, etc. But that has never stopped us. A lot of artists have got their first support who later became, you know, important, significant practitioners in their own space, received their first set of, you know, first sort of helping hand, little bit support from us. Another thing that's very important to us in grant making is we believe that we are part of the journey.
Okay.
We believe good work happens whether there's support or not, because artists will do it. We just help a little bit. So we keep that space for ourselves that we don't own the project.
Okay.
It's not ours. It's somebody else's dream. And you have to be more careful about somebody else's dream than your own. Because your rights are limited, but your responsibilities are huge.
Very interesting. So now a little philosophical question for you. You know, why is art important in our lives?
Yeah, we get this asked every day, you know, because we have to raise money, right? And I think the, so that, I mean, obviously one could write a thesis on this, and theses have been written. I will mention three things again, which are important to me. I think the first thing is that the arts enables you to ask questions about yesterday, understand and reflect about today, and gives you the tools to imagine a better tomorrow for everyone. So that's my first reason.
Okay.
It's a very personal, individual reason.
Sure.
The second reason is a more community reason. The art allow you, so when you're watching a play or reading a book, it allows you to be in the place of someone else whose life is not like yours, whose life is different, but to be able to somewhat connect to that life. You know, when I am sitting and watching Sholay, I am there with Viru and Jay.
Correct.
I am there experiencing the way they are. And I understand a little bit more about somebody else's life who's totally different from me. That's the second thing.
Right.
And the third thing I feel is, when you put the first two things together, it builds in you a sense of belonging, but also a ever-increasing sense of curiosity. And you are able to understand at the very basic core the connectedness of humanity. I think the arts makes you more human.
Okay, interesting. And, you know, are you focusing on artists primarily from one region of the country, or is it national?
No, it's national.
Okay.
It's completely national, and our effort has been, and I think we can proudly say we are the only organization in the country that accepts proposals in all Indian languages, including English. And we had, and we've been trying to do this for the longest time. And I think a breakthrough happened when somebody called one of our program officers, says, "Do you also accept proposals in English?" Because you know, so it was the the flip side of it, right? That, so yeah, all regions. And we do focus between year to year on certain regions where we discuss and say, okay, we're not getting enough proposals from this state or this area or this region or this discipline. Then we make special efforts and to strategically disseminate the program so that we get more proposals from those areas.
Fascinating. So my next question to you, Arundhati, is that this is the age of the millennials and the Gen Zs. They're the people who are now taking over the world. What is, in your opinion, is their involvement in the world of art, and how passionate are they? Are they for art?
I think, you know, again, it's not a homogeneous generation, right? I mean, there is that generation in foreign universities studying because they can afford or are meritorious enough. There is that generation in our own cities studying, and there is that generation in our own cities not studying and working or waiting for work.
Sure.
So just to say that in every possible way, there's a huge, it's a very heterogeneous kind of community that you're talking about.
Right.
So let's say young people today, what we understand as young.
Yeah.
People.
Yeah.
But the one thing that's very inspiring is their passion for the arts. Mm. And I have seen young people, and specifically I want to talk about folks who come from families which can't afford to have artists. So do you understand when I say that?
Yeah.
And how passionate people are, how much they will continue to do theater while they are sitting at their father's kirana ka dukan in the morning.
Wow.
I've seen this in Pune. I've seen this in Nasik. I've seen this in Bardhaman. So I think there is this sense that at one end, that I want to do the arts, even if I have to substitute it in other ways. But you know, the fear I have there is, how long are they going to sustain it this way?
Mm-hmm.
If there is so little help, if there is so little infrastructure, if the ecosystem is so, sort of loaded against people who come from families that can't afford it, very soon they will be pushed to the brinks. I mean, we saw that with COVID, that people just said, okay, I mean, I can't do this anymore. I was somehow managing, but now I need to go back and earn a living.
Correct.
I know people who land up, say, in Bombay to do film or theater or, you know, pursue the arts, in some time are forced to go back and join, you know, little businesses, dukans that parents run.
Correct.
It's a hard time for them. It's a much, much, like, darker time.
Hmm. Okay, so one more question on art, then I'll move to some questions personally. Hmm. You know, for a long time, Indian art and art forms have been seen as exotic, if I may say so, in the global world stage.
Hmm.
As someone who has spent so much time with arts and art and artists, do you see perception of the world beginning to change for art coming out of India?
Yes and no.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it depends on which part and how. I think one of the biggest problems of the way the arts is seen, Indian arts is seen abroad, is because the way we represent them.
Correct.
And a lot of us who live abroad actually live at an ancient time.
Right.
We're not ourselves aware of contemporary, what is happening in contemporary arts in India.
Mm.
So you see, when arts is talked outside the country, it's always the classical arts that are talked about. Contemporary arts, where Indian artists are making work in theater, in dance, in music, in visual arts, literature, is not known as much. Literature more so, I would say, than anything else. On the other hand, I think there are spaces where contemporary artists are making their mark.
Mm.
They are traveling, they are showing their work elsewhere. And that kind of exoticization is moving to a more critical engagement with it.
Very nice.
I think that's happening.
Mm.
But the biggest people to blame are ourselves, either people who are living there or people like us, you know, you and me, who curate these things. When we think of a festival curation for India, we go back to ancient times. And ancient time is another debatable thing. But we never give focus to what is contemporary. If you look at Ministry of Culture support to the arts, there is so little for contemporary, almost nothing.
Absolutely.
But there is so much for the classical arts, the folk arts.
Mm.
So we have to also focus on all art forms, you know. So we have to be there at the biennales, at the international festivals, support artists to be present and showcase their work. These are expensive affairs.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Well said. So, I'm now going to move to a few questions for you personally.
Okay.
So, Arundhati, for someone who has, you know, achieved so much, doing such amazing work in the world of art, from where you stand today, as you look back and as you look ahead, what does success mean to you?
Honestly, I've never asked that question, Ashutosh. And I'm not sure. I'll be very honest. One has done what one dreamt of, what one wanted to do, what one felt there was a need for. And it gave great pleasure to see that take shape and to become something, from nothing to something. And when it is somebody else's work, it gives you ever more so much more joy. Somebody else's dream that has come to fruition because some role you have played in it somewhere. So I feel my role has been more like a facilitator, like a catalyst, maybe provoking something, which is also IFA's role in the arts. And I think there one hasn't quite measured success in that sense.
Fair enough.
It's a certain kind of satisfaction, happiness, and wanting to do more.
Okay. And a follow-up question to that, Arundhati, is what or who inspires you?
You know, I spoke about the Aravani Art Project, right? When I imagine somebody being born in a man's body and wanting to be a woman, I mean, as a woman, I know how many things one has to deal with, hurdles, obstacles, oppression, etc., etc., etc. Even of somebody who's as privileged as I am, given where I was born and etc., the education I have, the work I do. So when that is even more in an even more marginalized kind of space, I cannot imagine the amount of courage, the amount of strength of vision that one needs to have to become a woman.
Okay.
So I'm giving this example because I think I'm superbly inspired by people who take their chains and push till those chains break. No matter where they are doing it from. It could be oppressions of any kind. I mean, obviously the usual, your gender, your sexuality, your race, caste, creed, etc. But also of those people whose voices are systematically erased or ignored. And you keep at it. I think that persistence, in spite of all the frustration, the hope that one sees beyond, that inspires me a lot. You know, it's like this is somebody who had said that you don't ask if you're going to win or lose. You just ask yourself, am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing standing here in spite of everything?
Okay.
And if you are, that's it. So that inspires me.
Wonderful. So I have time for two more questions for you. My next question is on failure. My latest book has just come out 3 days ago on failure. And I've often said that parents in India don't teach children it's okay to fail. We always told first, head of the line, etc. And that manifests itself in our behavior patterns. Yet we fail and we learn. My question to you, Arundhati, is what have been some of your learnings from some of your mistakes?
There are tons of learnings, as you know, because we fail many more times than we succeed in any case. Two key things I want to talk about. One has been for me to know that everything has its own time. You can't decide the time. And this, I mean, it's a baking term, you know. If something at X degrees takes 1 hour to bake, you can't increase or decrease it.
Correct.
It takes that time. So you have to give things time. You can't decide that this will be done by this time or I will explain this to Ashutosh in this time. Ashutosh will take his time to understand something or come to terms with something.
Sure.
This understanding has come from the many failures because I have essentially been a very impatient person and I've timed everybody around me on my own clock. It doesn't work like that. You have to understand other people's clocks.
Correct.
And in a very philosophical way also.
Correct.
So that is my first understanding.
Okay.
My second realization from failure is that it is so inevitable that you probably need to stop calling it failure. It is just a way of life. It is, and you know, people say, oh, failure is the road to success, etc., etc. I think it's time to forget all that.
Yeah.
It is time to look at failure as one aspect of life. And the moment you put it down from that pedestal and say that, you know, it's as simple as waking up in the morning and having a headache.
Mm.
You know, you can't control that.
Mm.
You just have it. It's part of life. You go through it and you then lead your rest of the day.
Mm.
So the fact that it is very much an essential, important, inevitable part of who you are is something I've had to learn, because I'm also somebody who started off with massive ego,
mm-hmm.
massive pride in my abilities, and massive sense of control,
mm-hmm.
total disregard for the randomness of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something my stroke has taught me, that control what you will, mm-hmm. but if something has to happen, it will.
Mm-hmm.
Your job is to then to deal with it and say, how do I get out of it?
Very well
how
said.
Do I make this better? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very well said. Arundhati, we've run out of time. I would love to carry on conversation.
Well, this has been wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you for taking me on this incredible journey of your foundation and the incredible work that you're doing by so many artists. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast. Platform that brings you knowledge, experience and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.